On a cold and rainy night, I was sitting in the light of my switchman's shack, a mine post on the mountain. The storm was pretty bad and the telephone was dead, but it was just 11 hours till the dawn. Then, much to my surprise, the telegraph.
Well, Roger Stone's quite the historian on Republican politics because he lived it. He was there going back to Nixon. They say he's the youngest of the plumbers, the only one not to go to prison. But the point is that we'll get into that in the next segment. But finishing up with this, look, I understand the Democrats are super bad news and terrible, but I also understand why a lot of Republicans become disillusioned and upset. I mean, Trump reportedly is mad that there's no indictments, but then how does he not understand it's Todd Blanche? Maybe we'll see something out of him, you know, Cash Patel, all these guys. Where is it? Where is the deep state getting in trouble, Roger? You're probably second to none, other than Trump, a victim of these people. You've got skin in the game. So do I. And Ed Martin was doing an investigation into the CIA and DOJ running all their fake lawsuits against me. That smoking gun where they funded it illegally. And then Blanche killed it and told ABC News that I'm a kook and don't deserve to be protected. Even though Trump had approved that investigation, I confirmed that with the DOJ. So why does he let Todd Blanche do that, and where are we going with this?
You know, I'm not going to come on here and criticize Todd Blanche, because he has given the prosecutors in South Florida the resources that they need to proceed, and I believe that is going to happen. You can only have one attorney general at a time. This is who the president has chosen. I'm not going to criticize the president's picks. I prefer to look forward rather than look backwards. But both in the area of election integrity, this is a pretty simple thing. You can get the list of everybody in the country who's died in the last 12 months. That's findable online. That can be compiled online, and you can compare it to the voting lists in every one of the states, and you can find those who are on the voter files who are still registered to vote, some of whom may have even voted in primaries, who are no longer with us. That kind of election integrity stuff absolutely needs to be done if we're going to win the next election. The Democrats refuse to give us the SAVE Act. It's beyond belief that the idea that you have to be a U.S. citizen and have a photo ID, that's not controversial. That's common sense. But 51 votes won't carry it in the Senate. They're telling us you need 60 votes in the Senate because of an arcane custom. A tradition that we can't bring that to a vote. I give the Republicans in the House credit. They passed it yesterday. They attached it to the defense appropriations. But now the Senate appears to me that they're going to leave for the summer and not do so. There's nothing more important than doing that if we're going to win the next elections. Yes, we need to see prosecutions in South Florida. I believe that Todd Blanche is committed to that now. I've spoken to him. I've watched his public comments. I know for a fact that he's giving the prosecutors in South Florida the resources and the authority they need. So I prefer to look forward. I think that's going to happen. I think it has to happen if this coalition is going to hold together.
Well, we've been hearing forever this is going to happen, but not normally from you. And you're a guy that doesn't just say things that you don't think are true. So you think these prosecutions are gearing up and we're going to see something?
Yes, I do. I am newly optimistic about it, and I think that is going to happen. I appreciate your mentioning my upcoming book on Reagan. It's important. I think it will be historically significant, Alex, because John Hinckley was crouching.
Hold your horses, Roger. 400 plus stations don't carry the first five. That's why I was getting them ready. Let's come back and talk about. I can't wait to read it because I know you know more than. I mean, you knew Nixon, big buddies with him, and you know, knew Reagan, but also all the insiders. And this book's going to have some stuff. It's going to shake up the Republican establishment big time. We're going to talk about it when we come back and then tie it into the climate we're in right now in this country, battling over the heart and soul of the Republican Party. We know the Democrats don't have a soul, so the fight is in the Republican Party for the future of this country. We'll be right back.
This shower filter slays 95% of the lead, 99% of the chlorine, and keeps that damn atrazine out of your water. protect yourself. Don't let them turn you gay. Purify it now. Mother, do you really want to shower with me? Do you want to clean everything? Oh, Mother!
I'm not gay. You are.
Real time, uncensored, unstoppable. AlexJonesLive.com. Take a stand. Share the link.
Do you want to fight? You better believe you got one!
Fortune tanto, fortune razzi, latibus obsedis, fortune amici, fortune razzi.
From the front lines of the information war, it's Alex Jones.
Well, Roger Stone has been in the White House since the Nixon administration. And confidants up until the time he died with Nixon. Rogers told me a few off-the-record things that are really interesting, but I'll never tell. And big confidants with Trump, obviously, too. But it's a big deal historically to know what really happened with Reagan. So you're recognized by many of the analysts and critics as the guy that wrote the definitive book on Kennedy. And now as more got declassified and came out, and we got that document in audio last year of the head of the Democratic Party talking about how they did kill Kennedy, and that thing got like 100 million views. That was massive and historic. Even the president took notice of that. So it's important to get this stuff historically on the record. But your book on Reagan, you haven't really told me what's in it, but we've had dinner discussions and conversations and a few on air about the First Lady, the wife of Reagan, Nancy Reagan, and who she knew was behind it. And then, well, then why was Bush Sr. there? Why was Herbert Walker Bush there? Well, they, at the convention, forced him in. I'm guessing that's going to be in your book, and I'm guessing it's going to be pretty definitive, and I'm, because I don't know how long I've been working on this, and I'm guessing this is going to piss off the Republican establishment, but they're pretty much already done now, especially the whole Bush power structure. So this is an idea whose time's come. Give us a first look of what's going to be in this book.
Well, thanks, Alex. First of all, it is important that you pointed out that the Billy Sol Estes tape, which you unearthed along with locals there in Texas, totally confirmed the thesis of my New York Times bestselling book, The Man Who Killed Kennedy, The Case Against LBJ. So for anyone who doubted it, you got the definitive audio tape in which Cliff Carter, the chief political operative for Lyndon Baines Johnson, admits on tape to Billy Sol Estes that, yes, LBJ had brought in Malcolm Mack Wallace to kill John F. Kennedy. You exposed this to the world. It was one of the biggest broadcasts you've ever had, but it completely confirmed the thesis of my book. So I'm very, very grateful to you for that. The name of my upcoming book on the attempted assassination of Ronald Reagan is Bushwhacked, which I think gives you the flavor. The point here is that John Hinckley Jr., who is a man who was convicted of attempting to kill Reagan, is always crouching in front of Reagan, shooting from an upward trajectory. Yet I was able to determine through medical records and interviews with doctors and also Secret Service agents that Reagan was hit from above and behind. This idea that a bullet had ricocheted off the frame of the window of the presidential limousine and hit Reagan still doesn't explain how the bullet gets behind him. Now, Judy Woodruff, who was then with NBC, correctly reports seeing a man on a balcony above the entrance of the Hilton Hotel. If you go to that famous picture of Reagan, you know, waving, and you see that it's been cropped, you can actually see this man. Now, Woodruff assumed that that was a Secret Service agent, and that was a part of the security. In retrospect, I believe that is the second shooter. I think that Hinckley was shooting wildly, hit my friend James Brady in the head. He hit a Secret Service agent. I believe he also hit a D.C. police officer. But it is not coincidental that John Hinckley Sr. Was a Texas oil man and a partner of George H.W. Bush, and that his company, Vanderbilt Energy, was bought out by Zapata Energy, which I think is widely recognized to be a CIA front. Tough to be in the Texas oil business in the 70s, 60s and make no money. But that's basically, what they're trying to tell us. Now, it gets even funkier. John Hinckley Sr. had a contract with the Department of Defense for these so-called refugee camps around the world. One specific camp in Laos, I was able to document the fact that Mark David Chapman and John Hinckley Jr. were at this camp, which I believe is a training camp, maybe an MK Ultra training camp, at the exact same time. So, yes, I think that there was a conspiracy that went well beyond John Hinckley Jr. to kill Ronald Reagan. And there's the background here is that Reagan and Bush were wrangling over control of the national security apparatus. It was after the attempt on Reagan that we got the entire effort in Nicaragua to illegally arm the rebels, Iran-Contra. All of that takes place after George Bush and his allies in the CIA, who had basically been thrown out by Jimmy Carter and Stansfield Turner after the Church Committee exposed the many excesses of the CIA, after they, I think, got control of the national security apparatus.
Well, I mean, I know what happened, and I've talked to you about what happened, and I know about the Hinckleys, meeting in Colorado days before with the Bushes, but I didn't know the name of the book was Bushwhacked. I figured it would be about them and what Nancy knew and what she said to people and the witnesses. I know you were telling me people that have never been interviewed before or spoken out, so it's going to be bombshell. You told me a few years ago when you're working on it that this is going to be your biggest book you think most important ever, and that's a lot because you've written some important books. But now it's called Bushwhacked. Oh, my goodness. So they're not going to be too happy about this.
Well, they're probably not too happy about my book, The Bush Crime Family. By the way, you can get any of these books by going to stonezone.com in the store. You get a signed copy of them. But I lay out the entire history of the Bush crime family, their involvement in assassination, drug trafficking, pedophilia, and so on. It is a lively read. So, look, I'm a Republican, but I'm not a Bush Republican. I think people know that. The other thing we do need to touch on, which is really extraordinary, and I give the Vice President J.D. Vance credit for this, is this incredible new interest and reexamination of the record of one Richard M. Nixon. When J.D. Vance went to the Nixon Presidential Library and said quite casually in his remarks that Nixon was taken down by the same deep state forces who tried to take down Donald Trump, he ignited a public interest that frankly was also enabled by these young guys at the Nixon Foundation who very skillfully using archival footage, speeches, photos, memes on Instagram, on X, on YouTube, have really ignited a new interest and a new re-examination of Richard Nixon, who was set up and taken down in a silent coup. In other words, the same forces that killed John Kennedy, the same forces are the same forces who removed Richard Nixon in a silent coup. What was their motive? Nixon turned out not to be the ultimate hardliner they thought he was, but he ended the war in Vietnam. They didn't like that. The war in Vietnam was very profitable for some people, particularly Lyndon Johnson and his wife, who owned a lot of Bell helicopter stock and a lot of Sikorsky stock. He open the door to China. And this is very important. At a time that China was a dirt poor, backwards agrarian society, few people had indoor plumbing. The rural areas had no electricity. They were not the economic or military superpower they are today. They did not become a superpower until Bill Clinton gave the Chinese communists first most favored nation trading status, then extended by George W. Bush. That is what makes China a superpower and a dangerous country, not their recognition by Richard Nixon. Nixon played the Chinese and the Russians off against each other. He knew that although they were both technically communists, they had hundreds of miles of shared border and a historical animosity towards each other. He very skillfully exploited that to get a strategic arms limitation agreement out of the Soviets that probably saved his country literally billions of dollars in defense spending. So it's a bum rap to say, oh, the fact that China is a menace today, that's Nixon's fault. It's not Nixon's fault at all. But the fact that we can now demonstrate that declassified documents definitively prove that the Central Intelligence Agency knew about the Watergate break-in in advance, that they infiltrated the Watergate burglar team, that at least four of the burglars were on the active payroll of the CIA, that James McCord and E. Howard Hunt, whose son St. John Hunt co-wrote my book On the Bushes with me, were well aware, had worked together previously and knew each other through their service in the CIA. This was an op. Now add to the fact that John Dean is the weasel who plans, pushes, and then covers up the Watergate break-in, and then lies to Nixon for 19 straight months about his knowledge of it and who else in the White House knows about it. When Dean publishes his book, The Nixon Defense, which he claims are the definitive transcripts of all of the White House conversations, he very conveniently leaves out the transcripts of March of 1973, where he basically urges Nixon to commit perjury and to lie. So he tries to cover up his own guilt. That is undeniable. So the great thing about this, and they're calling it Nixon maxing, is it gets us beyond Watergate. And people can look at the overall record, ending the war in Vietnam, desegregating the public schools, saving Israel from annihilation in the 1973 Yom Kippur War, over the objections of Henry Kissinger, over the objections of the national security apparatus, the 18-year-old vote, ending the military draft, launching the war on cancer. This is an extraordinary record that's gotten buried in the ashes of Watergate. And this new interest in Richard Nixon is a very positive thing. Why did they hate him? I'll tell you why they hated him. Because he exposed a Russian agent of influence, Alger Hiss. And the left has never forgiven him for it. That's why they sought to destroy him. Great stuff written about this by Pat Buchanan in his book, The Greatest Comeback. It's also covered in both my books, Nixon Secrets and Tricky Dick, The Rise and Fall and Rise of Richard M. Nixon. So, yeah, I'm loving it. I've got a tattoo of him on my back. People make fun of that. They say, oh, that's weird. It's not weird. It's a daily reminder in life when you get knocked down, when you suffer defeats, when you're disappointed and you're discouraged and you feel like giving up, that's the time you got to dust yourself off, get up off the mat, and get back in the fight. So the story of Nixon is a story of resilience. It's a story of persistence. It's an American story. That's the reason for the tattoo. If you don't like it, I don't really give a damn.
Now, the time we have left, just a few minutes left, let's get into Nixon. I mean, I sort of noticed this a few years ago, like he's like an iconic figure with young people, seen as a rebel. He was the most popular president in the last century in polls till the deep state came after him and then so demonized. But now, I mean, I just see young people talking about him, memes everywhere. Even the mainstream media, we know overhead shot, has picked up on this. Why Richard Nixon has suddenly gone viral. The 37th President Foundation has posted a slew of slickly edited videos aiming to make the late disgrace president seem cool. It appears to be working. That's not what's happening. I love it how the media thinks like the foundation did that. No, it's the general public has been learning about this and learning what happened to Nixon. And they've been watching clips of what he had to say back then and realizing how visionary he was. So you were really good friends with him. Not so much when he was at first in the White House, but you knew him then and worked for him. You got to be really good buddies with him. What type of guy was Nixon, and why did the system come after him?
They came after him because he was an anti-communist. They came after him because he was a true American who put the country first. If you look at his interviews, particularly when he's asked about our nation's relationship with Israel, he's extraordinarily candid. So he was the original America Firster. They hated him because he was a hardline anti-communist. But they also hated him because he was for peace. So the deep state knew that he distrusted the CIA, knew that he was going to completely reorganize our intelligence services. That's why they took him down. Unfortunately, he made the mistake of trusting people, but there's no evidence that he knew about the Watergate break-in. Alex, you understand American politics. You're headed for the largest landslide in American history. You're leading in the polls in every state but one. There's nothing of value at the Democrat National Committee for you to steal. Why would you approve a break-in at the Watergate Hotel or the Watergate office complex? The answer is you wouldn't. So the whole thing is a setup, but it does, I think, and I give J.D. Vance huge credit for this because he really started just that comment at the Nixon Library. And then, frankly, the folks at the Nixon Foundation, who back when I was arrested, they put out a statement saying that, well, Roger Stone was never in the administration. I never said I was. I worked in the 68 and 72 campaigns. And then in his post-presidential years, I worked very closely with the president and with Monica Crowley, who was his personal assistant, on scheduling and running down some political intelligence for the president, who had a voracious appetite for what was going on. He was always very forward-looking. That's when he gave me his famous recipe for a martini, what he used to call a silver bullet. I'll go through that with you really quickly because it's kind of interesting. You take a bottle of olives, you drain the juice, you fill it with water, you shake it up, you drain the water, you fill it with vermouth, put it in the refrigerator. You've chilled a couple of glasses. Then you take the chilled bottle out of the refrigerator. You take out your cocktail shaker. You fill it with either vodka or gin. He was a gin man. I'm a vodka man. And he would say, you shake it very vigorously, very vigorously. If there aren't tiny shards of ice on the surface, well, that means you've effed it up. You then drop two of the marinated olives in, and you have what he called his favorite silver bullet. So after the first one, I said to him, Mr. President, this is really good. He said, yeah, I got the recipe from Winston Churchill. Now, that is a piece of history you can't get anywhere else.
Why do you think the young people, I mean, obviously he's now seen as a rebel, which he was. Why do the young people love him so much now, just as a way to be anti-establishment?
I think it's because he was an outsider. Like Trump, he was an outsider. Also, I think they realize that the idea that, you know, that John Dean and Nick Ackerman, the phony former Watergate prosecutor, tries to pretend he's a law enforcement guy when he's a vicious partisan. This guy says, we know Nixon approved the break-in, we could just never prove it. Well, then you don't know it. Or Jill Wein-Volner, another one of the Watergate. These people are flipping out because they thought this door was shut. I can tell you this, that my two books on Nixon, Nixon's Secrets and Tricky Dick, The Rise, Fall, and Rise, Richard Nixon, have never sold as well as my book on the Kennedy assassination, the case against LBJ, the man who killed Kennedy, the case against LBJ, because for most Americans, unfortunately, the question of Nixon is like a settled question. He was a paranoid, he was a crook, he was evil, nothing else to see there. He's getting a second look now, and people, I think that he was for peace and prosperity. Now, that's not to say they didn't make mistakes. John Connolly talked him into taking us off the gold standard, an egregious mistake. I highlight it in both of my books. So, look, I'm not saying that he was a saint. I'm not saying he was perfect. I'm not saying that everything he did on balance was good. But by and large, now at least his actual record is getting a review. And the reason I think young people believe that he was taken down by a deep state coup is they just saw them try the exact same thing on Donald Trump, and it didn't work. So if the left thought that Nixon, that Trump, like Nixon, was going to throw in the towel, well, they don't understand Donald Trump. But they also don't understand the power of the internet. Now, I am very grateful to Elon Musk. I'm a big fan of Elon Musk. I love Elon Musk. I'm a great fan to have my voice back on X, where I'm Roger J. Stone Jr. Yet I am, it's quizzical that I continue to lose followers. In other words, I'm out there. I say provocative and interesting things. You know me, Alex. Yet instead of gaining followers, I continue to lose followers. So I have to wonder whether the algorithms are working against me, or maybe some of the old staffers who were there back in the days when it was an instrument for cancellation. But you can follow me on X, Roger J. Stone Jr., Roger J. Stone, JRB, a great experiment, because the more audacious I am, the more truth telling I do on X, for some reason I don't gain views. I salute you, Alex, because you're getting record audiences on X. I think X is a great, great platform, although I don't like these recent updates. But I do have to wonder why, when I get out there and start hitting the deep state, why I start losing followers rather than gaining them.
Well, that's how it works. If you go along with the establishment, you get boosted. And it's the same thing happens to us, but the listeners just fight through it and share the articles and videos because they know how important it is. But this has been a long fight. You know, some people get really pessimistic, and I get it too. I get the same way. But I said at the start of the interview, they have to see how far we've moved the needle for populism, of nationalism. Yeah, the censorship's still happening there and here and in bad ways, but we're fighting back on that. I mean, humanity's found its fight, and that's a beautiful thing.
Well, look, I urge people to go to your website and buy your Nixon t-shirt. I am loving this Nixon maxing and the fact that we have a revival and a fair reexamination of the man's record as president. Yes, I didn't like wage and price controls. I didn't like taking us off the gold standard. I did like ending the war in Vietnam. I did like a strategic arms limitation agreement with the Soviets. Yeah, I did like the desegregation of the schools. Richard Nixon appointed more African Americans to federal office than LBJ and JFK combined. We won't find that in the history books. They're not going to tell you that online. So, yes, I think this reexamination of Nixon is a great thing. I urge people who have already bought into the narrative that he was evil, he was crooked, he was paranoid, put that aside and look at Richard Nixon with fresh eyes, and you'll see that he was indeed among our greatest presidents.
Well, I mean, I've experienced corporate media's lies, and until you open the paper up and you read something that's 100% not true, and then they stack lies on top of lies, you don't realize how bad they lie. I mean, it's just so intense, the deception of these people when they come after somebody. It's real simple. If they're coming after somebody, you better believe that they're a lot better than those guys. Doesn't mean they're perfect, but it means they're a lot better than the establishment. So, Roger, talk to you soon. God bless you.
Thank you, Alex. Thanks for having me back.
All right, so Trump is looking at dropping nukes on Iran. We've got Matt Bracken talking about that with Mariano Fall, and more on the NDAA, then a bunch of domestic news, AI news, and more, all coming up today. Stay with us on this live Friday broadcast.
And a microscopic tag be implanted in a person's body to track his every movement. There's actual discussion about that.
And often they're things you don't know what to do with. UBOs, they're called unidentified bright objects.
Can brain scans be used to determine whether a person is inclined toward criminality or violent behavior?
Who's got the brain that's going to be most susceptible to a particular kind of manipulation?
So the point is, they've been obsessed with this. It's going on. The COVID shots implanted the matrix graphene oxide to grow. It's now being scanned. It's now being read. They were putting chips in the troops 30 years ago. The revolution's already here, is what you're saying, Jesse Beltran.
These are just chips on a size that you can no longer see. They're nano size. One's 2,000 times the width of a human hair. The graphene oxide, the silicon-based materials that have been in, we know for a fact that they were in the mRNA. We know that Dr. Ido Bachelet signed a contract with Pfizer in 2015 when he did that TEDMed talk with a trillion robots in a 1cc syringe, and how he teaches his students how to, once they're in a host, how to control them with RF emissions.
And you heard Collins saying 21 years ago that, oh, yeah, when we're doing scans, we find all these chips, these bright objects, ha, 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 wonder who put them there. But as you said, you've been doing this 20 years, and about 10 years ago, you began to go away, not seeing chips anymore, but just liquid emulsion nanotech. Here you are 6 months ago or more scanning me. Let's go to Alex Jones getting scanned.
So if you put that camera in there, you see how it says probably silicone? That means it's an electronic component. And it's not unusual to find that in the posterior ear area.
So wait, I got a higher reading than him?
No, his was higher than yours.
Okay,
yeah,
that's good.
Yeah, but you did get a positive reading there. So you are getting the you know, base of the neck is what we typically see. Scapula area. What we're finding is after post-COVID, this is very typical. We're completely bombarded by this stuff.
From your own research, there are compounds naturally in nature that just do absolutely incredible things that will draw out these type of things. But you guys have come up with one with scientists that adds these special sea minerals in that then even drags it out even more. And so I have been taking this, the dreams I've had, my skin, my health. What it's done is absolutely insane. Get masterpiece.com. Matt Hazen, tell us what this does, and people can get 10% off when they follow the URL, getmasterpiece.com, or use promo code Alex when you're there on the site, because this is really special.
Zeolite is an incredible mineral that is known as what's called the master binder. And what that means is it's known to pick up every type of forever chemical, toxin, toxic heavy metal there is, including fluoride. So when you see charcoal or carbon or clays for binders, you don't see that they will pick up fluoride. Zeolite's different. Zeolite also gets the fluoride. That's a very big deal. It is great at removing these environmental toxins from our body. Masterpiece is the highest grade sea mineral plasma solution. It is basically isotonic, the same mineral composition as your blood plasma. So the sea minerals are being carried in by the nanometer, sub-nanometer size clinoptilolite zeolite. And once the toxin hits the zeolite, it releases and displaces the mineral. People don't feel bad. There's no normal detoxing reaction.
Everybody needs to go to getmasterpiece.com. You get 10% off by using that URL automatically when you go. There's promo code Alex as well. Getmasterpiece.com.
It's Alex Jones.
Folks, Jason Burmes is loaded for Barry's coming to the fourth hour. We got a lot of news and information and things to cover in the meantime on this live Friday global transmission. We obviously know what's happening and that Trump's totally panicked and now it's leaking out of the White House, is throwing huge tantrums. I don't just believe that when I read it in the corporate news. This has been going on since about 30, 40 days into the war. And it's here in the news today, being reported by a bunch of publications. Trump's foul-mouthed Iran meltdown leaked as president in revenge mode as he runs out of options. And that's because interest rates just got raised and the economy's falling apart and inflation's huge and the Strategic Oil Reserve runs out in less than a week. The Chinese one's about to roll out. The EU reserve's about to run out. And they're now talking in the Wall Street Journal and Forbes about $160 a barrel oil. Woo! You talk about economy in shambles. But remember that panicker, Tulsi Gabbard warned Trump, and that panicker, the chairman of the Joint Chiefs, Kane, warned him. And the panicker, Alex Jones, said all that. But, you know, we're just informed know what we're talking about. We're the problem. We're not like a Laura Loomer or a Mark Levin or a Ben Shapiro. Notice Ben never gives you statistics. I played a clip of him last year. He's like, it's stupid. It's dumb. The NDAA Section 219 doesn't give Israel any power. It's nothing. They're just liars. Oh, AOC's against it, so it's liberal. Just a load of just terms. Notice when we talk about something, we give you the numbers. We show you the facts. We predict things. They come true. But the media, oh, Ben Shapiro, he's the smartest man in the world. He knows everything. He's like a god. He talks fast. Look how big his eyebrows are. And so for decades, they've, at the Pentagon, some of the elements of it have been pushing that we should be able to use tactical nuclear weapons whenever we want. And it's not like a real nuclear bomb. It's, no, it's okay. We're taking out bunkers or nuclear sites in Iran. That they've been talking for 20 years about hitting Iran with nukes. Now, why is that an even bigger problem? Well, even if it's a smaller nuclear weapon, when it detonates in the ground, and if you hit a nuclear site with it that's full of uranium, if the uranium's even dumb enough to leave it there, if that's in the area of the chain reaction, it creates the most deadly isotopes you can imagine. That's what really kills you if you're not killed in the direct blast. And with most hydrogen bombs, atomic bombs, they airburst, so they're pretty clean overall. There's a little bit of fallout. So you just don't want to eat the crops for a few months or whatever because it precipitates out, then it washes off. But when you have a nuclear reactor meltdown, then it's dirty. It's horrible. Well, a bomb is far worse when it hits the ground. In fact, if a hydrogen bomb, let's say, hit a cobalt mine or hit a cobalt depot, it would put enough deadly radiation in the atmosphere for no life on the surface for tens of thousands of years. I mean, we're talking about half-lives in the billions of years. Okay? So you can look this up for yourself. So if you bomb a radioactive facility, like let's say you bomb a nuclear reactor with a tactical nuke, and then when it detonates, everything around it when during chain reaction, it depends on how the type of bomb and how big it is, but even the tactical nuke, we're talking tens of thousands of feet out from it. You're going to have chain reaction, and anything metal, anything that it gobbles up, it's going to throw off these horrible isotopes. The worst is something like cobalt. But you also detonated a bunch of uranium or plutonium, it does something really nasty too. In fact, some estimates are it could potentially trigger more nuclear explosions in the chain reaction. So there's that issue with it, and then there's the bigger issue. If you start using nuclear weapons and saying, well, these are just tactical, it's okay for us to, you now have set the precedent that other countries can say, hey, you used a tactical nuke, we can too, and that accelerates up the escalatory ladder, as we've talked about so much. So we've had a lot of floating, use regular hydrogen bombs on Iran by Lindsey Graham and by Netanyahu and by Ben-Gavir and by all the usual suspects, Mark Levin. But now we've got the Pentagon saying, yeah, we want to drop bunker busters on these, not just this one nuclear site, but a whole bunch of them, starting with Pickaxe Mountain. And then once we blow a big hole in it with these bunker busters, then we'll drop the tactical end so it doesn't just explode on the surface and dissipate. Anybody knows an explosion, you know, that's why you'll have a little bit of explosive in a hand grenade jacketed by steel, and then it explodes because it's contained the explosion. It makes it bigger. Trump vows U.S. will strike Iran's Pickaxe Mountain pretty soon over suspected nuclear activity. And here's Matt Bracken and Mario DeFall yesterday talking about the talk of using the nukes. And, you know, he mainly focuses on the fact that this is all science fiction sounding and has just been as a political distraction from us getting embroiled in this fiasco. And that's part of it. And that's why how Trump's looking at it is like, oh, it's like Midnight Hammer. Look at our big victory. We're keeping you safe, to make it about we're there because of nukes. That's the reason we're there, not regime change. Yeah, that's the cosmetic reason this is going on. But the Pentagon and some of the hawks up there want this to set the precedent to use nukes. And Katie barred the door once that door is open. Here's the clip.
I was listening or following some accounts on X, and they're talking about, well, in order for the small tactical nuclear bomb to work on Pickaxe Mountain, they first have to create a hole with these bunker busters, because the tactical nuclear bomb, if it's just hitting the surface, won't work. So we have to first blast the hole with the bunker buster, and then the next thing puts the tactical nuclear bomb straight into the hole to take out whatever it is that's supposed to be inside of Pickaxe Mountain. And it just sounds like Hollywood is now writing the script. I mean, it's a total dislocation from reality, completely. But that's what, you know, we're following in America. We're shaping up for the big attack on Pickaxe Mountain. A Disney
Why
movie.
Pickaxe Mountain? Alexander from the Duran, I had him on the show a couple hours ago, and he said something interesting. He's like, Mario, have you noticed how Pickaxe Mountain came out of nowhere? What's the point of Pickaxe Mountain? It's unrelated to the Strait of Hormuz, has no strategic benefits to the U.S. If there's any, I don't know, enrichment, centrifuges in there, etc., but that is really not the issue here. That is not the objective of the war. The MOU has concessions when it comes to the nuclear program, but they haven't even reached those discussions, those negotiations. The issue seems to be the Strait of Hormuz. So why the hell did we add Pickaxe Mountain into the mix? What's the thinking behind it?
Possibly, you know, and Brandon Weikert says, you know, if you're looking for rationality to bail us out, like, nobody would be that crazy. It's completely irrational. We're in a post-rational decision process in America when you have people like Marco Rubio and Pete Hegseth that are the chief advisors to Trump. I think that it may possibly be, the idea might be, as an exit strategy, we have to have some victory. So if we drop 100 bunker busters, or God forbid, we drop bunker busters followed by a tactical nuclear weapon into Pickaxe Mountain, which could be empty for all I know. It could have no meaning whatsoever. It's like Top Gun Maverick. It's a Hollywood concoction, right? It's just a narrative to spin to the American audience that they can then say, we blew up Pickaxe Mountain. We have solved the Iranian nuclear problem forever. They will never rebuild it in 100 years, and now we're leaving. That's like my best case scenario for why they would do this, because clearly, you know, when people say we're going to end Iran's nuclear threat, well, you can't do that because the knowledge is there. You know, the threat is in the knowledge, the engineers. You can't turn the clock back to 1944. You know, the information is out there. If you destroyed every centrifuge in Iran, they can build more centrifuges. or they can get the nuclear material from Pakistan or North Korea. You know, the Israelis, their bombs at Dimona came from Pennsylvania. The uranium was left on the back loading dock of a facility in Pennsylvania where somebody forgot to close the gate and lock the door. Oh my goodness, these canisters are left on the loading dock. How did they wind up in Israel? Let's never have an investigation. So that it was handed to Israel. I'm not saying that, you know, the president of the USA was in on that decision, but essentially whatever forces Israel had in the USA opened the doors and the visible material was just handed to Israel. And this is not lost on the Iranians or anybody else in the area. You know, now Rubio is talking about starting a nuclear program with Saudi Arabia, which is not lacking for energy. They still have a lot of petroleum there. It's not like they're running out of petroleum to run power plants. So everybody in the Middle East knows the USA gave Israel the bomb. Whether the president knew it or not, the door was left open, and the next thing you know, wow, Israel has atomic weapons, and they're not part of any of it, of any of the international programs. They never admitted it. But the other day, Netanyahu went down to Dimona and said, oh, I'm at the textile factory, which is like, wink, wink. You know, and then suddenly the submarine surfaces in the Gulf of Aqaba around the corner from the Suez Canal with the and it's widely reported, oh, it has a dozen nuclear-tipped cruise missiles. You know, just happens to be lurking there near Iran. So we're in an era when the narrative is running everything and reality doesn't have much to do with anything. So possibly they're going to claim, we don't even know if any of this happens, right? Because the thing about a B-2 bomber, for example, it's invisible, right? So if an invisible B-2 bomber drops invisible bombs on an imaginary, you know, fantasy mountain, you can say whatever. You can say we dropped 100 bombs down the same hole and wiped out the Iranian nuclear program. And maybe there was no B-2 bomber at all because it's invisible. You can't prove it was there or not there because it's invisible. So I don't know what's going to happen with Pickaxe Mountain, but it just sounds like a complete Hollywood fantasy to me. It's like they're creating a Top Gun Maverick, you know, to feed the American audience.
There's another report that came out today that, according to Bloomberg, some Gulf officials are advocating for escalating the war and even conducting some sort of ground operation to get a decisive end to it and force Iran to give up their control of the Strait of Hormuz. So that's unconfirmed. First, do you think it's true? Do you think some Gulf countries are actually advocating for a ground operation by Iran? Because obviously Iran would retaliate.
Gulf countries or Gulf, you know, Gulf countries, meaning their population, or Gulf leaders?
No, Gulf officials, not even leaders.
So between the leaders and the population are officials, which are like unnamed. So it can just be like a leak for the purpose of a narrative. Didn't somebody from Jordan recently fly to London? Well, there was in the 1950s, there was a King Faisal, not Faisal, excuse me, King Farouk in Egypt. And he took a vacation in London and he never came home. And Colonel Nasser had a bloodless coup, kind of like Gaddafi, a bloodless coup. And King Farouk spent the rest of his remaining life like the Shah of Iran in exile and luxury. And I think that a lot of the Gulf states, what did Colonel McGregor calls them, statelets? You know, they're creations. And the leaders of them who are, you know, paid with cash in bank deposits. And look, Qatar just gifted a 747 to Trump, which he was foolish enough to accept, because this is like getting down to your level. This is like, here, have my daughter, have my prize racehorse. Here, have this dagger covered with diamonds. Here, have a 747. This is not how American presidents are supposed to act, right? But here, have a suitcase with 1 million euros in it. or having look check your bank account in Switzerland. It just went up by zeros. So a lot of these statelets, that, as McGregor calls them, the leaders of them have are probably telling their pilots, keep that Gulfstream 5 fueled up because I might be running out there in the helicopter and we're out of there in 5 minutes. You know, we're at that point where if, for example, the desalinization plants start getting hit in these countries, the people can't get out. And maybe the leader gets out. The king gets out. You know, the king Farouk gets out. But what about his cabinet? And what about his officials that are making these statements about, oh, we're going to now go to war against Iran? I don't believe that.
Yeah, that's an excellent clip. That's why I played a long clip. I mean, it's what's happening. And I hate watching the slow motion train wreck, but we have to focus on it. It's crazy. And Trump knows that he doesn't have an off ramp. And the Iranians are going to be belligerent because they know if they're not, they're just going to continue to have a peace deal. And then Israel and the U.S. attack them again later. And it just never ends. So they're to the point of, we don't believe in any negotiations. There's total war. We don't want ceasefires. Let's just have a war. And they've been saying that for months. And Trump acts like, oh, they're begging for a deal. Oh, yeah, they're really coming to the table. None of it's true. The folks that go and do the envoy work, Vance and Witkoff, come back and say, no, the Iranians won't even meet with us. You know, we meet with the Pakistanis and others. And so it's just verifiably not true. And so Trump's throwing fits at the White House. I mean, I understand he's banging his head against the wall with a problem that Israel manipulated him into, and it isn't going away, and it's getting worse. And there's nothing like a problem that just keeps happening over and over and over again and gets worse and worse and worse. And the more you try to make it better, it gets worse. Doesn't get better. It's worse. They call it Chinese water torture. And the universe loves that. It's its favorite thing. And the more you fight against it, the worse it's going to get. No, there'll be no rest. There'll be no. So we're going to feel the pain. We already do. You think inflation's bad now? Now, there is starting to get a lot of friction with the public. And, again, you've got everybody from Glenn Beck to Bill O'Reilly to Laura Ingraham coming out and saying, okay, you did a good job so far. Now it's time to end it right now. Okay, declare victory and say bye-bye. And I saw people commenting on Beck going, look at him kissing Trump's ass. Rex called him a Zionist lobster because Beck's like got red skin like I do, got a suntan. And, I mean, okay, Beck's not anti-Israel. People are brought up that way. Israel didn't used to be as bad as it is now. I don't have to hate people that are, like, you know, pro-Israel or whatever. I'm not anti-Israel. I just don't like Israel being run by lunatics. I mean, Ben-Gvir really runs Israel now, their national security head. They admit that. And, I mean, in the same day, he's like, I've got this death chamber where I kill people now at this base we built. Let me take you outside. I put crocodiles in here to eat people. And like, it's not a joke. He doesn't know how crazy it looks, but he does. He's like, I want to scare people. I like to terrify people. And then in the same day, he goes and storms Al-Aqsa Mosque with 4,000 people. And then before that, he's, oh, we caught some people trying to ship rice in on a flotilla. And then on TV, he slaps women in the face and knocks them to the ground that are in handcuffs. A big fat dude slapping women on TV. Like, it's just like, because he can. I mean, is he auditioning for the remake of Dune to be Baron Harkonnen? And you got to love the Dracula teeth. I mean, look at the eyes. You cannot, every video of him is like this. I mean, it'd be hilarious if it wasn't so serious. I mean, look at this guy. Good God. That's who runs Israel right now. Megalomaniac, completely disconnected from reality, totally psychopathic. Unbelievable. Absolutely unbelievable. Oh, and there's the finance minister 2 days ago. Oh, this is ideal. Americans killing for us. We don't have to do anything. Yeah, it's destroying the economy. That's great. At least it hurts Iran, too. It's kind of like Longshanks in Braveheart. And he says, fire with the archers is into the whole army. And he goes, well, sir, our army's there, too. They're battling. We'll kill our own people. And he goes, well, we'll get them, too. I mean, what must it be like to be in that head? like you look like a jack-o'-lantern. You look completely psychotic. You run around and beat women that are handcuffed on TV for no reason. You have crocodiles at a torture facility where you kill people. And Israel's got, like, what is it, 30, 40,000 kids they grab every year, as young as five. They take off the torture centers. And, I mean, just God knows. I just know I support all this because I don't want to go to hell. In fact, the Bible says do whatever the entire leadership of Israel says, and if you don't, you're going to hell. And again, that means Herod, who cut John the Baptist's head off. John the Baptist deserved to have his head cut off, and John the Baptist is in hell. Herod is in heaven, and Jesus went against the government of Israel. He was killed too, and you got to say, well, you don't go against the government of Israel, you go to hell. So Jesus is in hell according to, it actually says that in the Babylonian Talmud. It actually says Jesus is in hell bathing in feces and semen, boiling feces and semen, because he challenged the rabbis. I guess it's really the government of Israel. Now, the argument is for the rabbis is you can find any rabbi saying whatever you want at any time. And that's true, too. There's lots of nice stuff rabbis have written, too. I've read a lot of it. But there's some that are crazy and that happen to be in charge right now. And they got crocodiles and torture centers and stuff like that. Look at these guys. I don't think the elevator goes all the way to the top right there. So, but at least Ben-Gavir is always happy. I know this. He can go out for Halloween without even having to put on an outfit because he does have Count Dracula teeth. So that's always a good sign. Count Crocodile Man. I'm trying to think of a name for Ben-Gavir. Absolutely hilarious. If he wasn't so dangerous. Oh, my God. Help us, Lord. It's like looking at Kim Jong-un. Kim Jong-un looks like a little fat demon, too, but not as creepy as Ben-Gavir. There's a creep factor with him waddling around. All right, I'm gonna go to break, and I'm going to come back, and we'll look at interest rates going up. We'll look at the economy. We'll look at the Democrats, Democratic Socialists. I haven't gotten to the AI news. It's really big. AI is doing its biggest feats of breaking out of things and breaking into things now. We got these big corporate and Pentagon studies of it, and they're admitting it's already out of control and out of their grasp. So that's a pretty big report we're going to be getting to. And then Elon Musk did a powerful interview with The Economist and just absolutely tore this lady to pieces. So we've got a lot of that coming up next hour as well. Be sure and follow me on X at Real Alex Jones and on Rumble. Rumble.com/The Alex Jones Show Live. And if you want to keep us on the air and want to get some cool t-shirts and incredible supplements that'll change your life, then go to thealexjonesstore.com. If you don't, well, don't worry. Mondami's just going to come sitting up and shove a gun in your mouth and take everything you got. So either support those that fight for you or roll over and die.
At last, it's here. Bring it into the docking bay. Stack them all in my chambers at once. I now have all the AquaPure Ultimate Water Filter shower heads from the Alex Jones store.
There's something about this water I feel kind of funny. Hey, do you want to hang out tonight?
These stormtroopers are not warriors. They are vessels. We keep them full of chemicals to keep them under control. Like the dark side itself, it dulls the mind. It fractures the will.
Drink your water, troopers. I am sending you to the desert planet of Tatooine. We must crush the rebel force.
Dude, I think I'm gay. Me too. Let's go back to the ship and cuddle. I thought you'd never ask.
Turn around now and get back out there. These are your orders.
They're turning the frogs gay. Don't let them turn you next. Ha ha ha.
you have to admit that Alex Jones is funny.
AlexJonesLive.com. Share the link. Spread the word.
If you are receiving this transmission, you are the resistance.